3 a.m. Tales of Terror contains explicit content. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of 3 a.m. Tales of Terror, where we tell you stories of the paranormal and other stuff that's pretty scary. I'm Jamie.
And I'm Kenny.
Mm-hmm. And so last week, we skipped last week because I ended up having like a lot more homework than I thought I did. So, whoopsies. sorry about that, but we're back. And this week, we're going to tell you about the Piddick Mansion in Portland, Oregon, and the Jesse Lee Home for Children. The Jesse Lee Home for Children is in Alaska. We got those two for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so to start out, we're going to do the Piddick Mansion. Our supervisor's here. Supervisor. All right, we're ready. Built in 1914, Piddick Mansion was nearly razed to create a subdivision in the 1960s, before Portland residents came together to save it. Nestled in the Portland, Oregon, West Hills neighborhood is Piddick Mansion, a Victorian chateau-style abode with a haunted history. Built by Oregonian publisher Henry Piddick, the home once symbolized the heights of Portland's wealthy elite, but after just 4 years in its gilded walls, both homeowners died. Now, it is said both their spirits still hang around the mansion, as many strange occurrences have been reported in the following years. The man behind Piddick Mansion. Mountaineer and publishing magnate Henry Piddick was born in London on March 1st, 1835, but he spent most of his childhood in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, where he attended preparatory school and worked in his father's printing business starting at the age of 12. But inspired by stories of Western expansion and the frontier, Piddick and his brother joined two other families traveling west and landed barefoot and without a cent in Oregon Territory in October 1835. He found work as a typesetter for the founder of the Weekly Oregonian in Portland and eventually became the paper's managing editor. Around this time, Piddick met his wife Georgiana. They married in 1860. Piddick went on to become one of the wealthiest men in Oregon society as the man behind the city's major newspaper, and he consequently invested in a variety of industries, including railroads, banking, ranching, and mining. Piddick was also an avid climber and outdoorsman who helped to found the Mazamas Climbing Club and became part of the first expedition to climb Oregon's Mount Hood. Georgiana, too, was an active member of society, becoming involved in many cultural organizations and charities, including the Women's Union and the Ladies' Relief Society. She helped to found the Martha Washington Home, a residence for working women. She was also an enthusiastic gardener and was a founding member of the Portland Rose Society and the Portland Rose Festival. In 1909, the Piddicks decided that they wanted to build a home in Portland to retire in.
She busy.
Yeah, she is busy. She said, "Well, if you're gonna be hiking, I'm gonna be chatting,
gardening,
and chatting with her ladies and her societies."
Building an unprecedented mansion with big plans in mind, the Piddicks hire the architect Edward T. Falk to design their inimitable mansion from scratch. The 46-room mansion was built on a hill overlooking Portland, with a French Renaissance exterior. The inside was uniquely designed, with oak-paneled cabinets, marbled floors, a huge central staircase, modern amenities like an elevator and a dumbwaiter, and perhaps most strikingly, beautiful views of Mount Hood and the Cascade mountain range. Foil lines the inside of the entryway ceiling, a nod to Georgiana's frugal early years when she had to save foil from old tea containers in order to decorate the house. The Piddick Mansion was completed in 1914 when Georgiana was 68 years old and Henry was 80. Sadly, the couple did not have many years left together to enjoy the home they had built. Georgiana passed away in 1918, just 4 years after construction was completed, and Henry died the following year. Members of the Piddick family remained in the home for many years until their grandson, Peter Gottenbein, who had grown up in the house, attempted to sell it in 1958. Gantenbein was unable to do so, and the house consequently sat empty for several years. It was severely damaged as a result of the massive Columbus Day storm of 1962, and Gantenbein contemplated...
You have literally said his
three
name.
Different times. I know. three different ways. Yeah, I know. It's just a Jewish name. I don't know how to say it.
At least if you're going to say it, just pick one way.
No, I refuse to.
Oh, my God.
I got to try it out every single way. In Gantenbein... In Gantenbein... But there's a fourth one. Mm-hmm. Contemplated having the mansion destroyed. However, the community rallied around the famous site, and Portland residents donated $75,000 to help the city purchase and restore the old home. The city of Portland officially bought the Pittick Mansion in 1964, and a nonprofit was formed to take responsibility for the upkeep of the house. They spent just over a year repairing and restoring the mansion, and in 1965, it reopened as the Pittick Mansion Museum. It is open daily to the public for touring. It is on these tours many have claimed to encounter inexplicable experiences, perhaps with the late Pittick's themselves.
So.
English is hard.
Just his last name. All right, so the ghost. Since the 1960s, visitors have been reporting strange activity in and around the Pittick Mansion. Grounds workers and visitors alike all agree that the ghosts are not malevolent in any way. Many assume that the ghosts are the spirits of Henry and Georgiana Pittick. After all, who wouldn't want to spend an eternity in a beautiful mansion? Plenty of spooky occurrences happen daily at the mansion, some spookier than others. The highest reported activity happens in the upper rooms of the mansion. Visitors report that upon entering the rooms, they immediately smell the intense scent of rose perfume. Staff believes that this is Georgiana Pittick making her presence known. While most visitors report feeling surprised by the smell, most say that they felt that the present wished them no ill will. Outside, near the northern side of the mansion, visitors report hearing the sound of a shovel hitting the ground. Soon after, the sound of heavy footsteps stomping away towards the mansion can be heard. Staff believes that these are the sounds of the groundskeeper going about his daily routine. Like the Pittick's, the groundskeeper lived and died in the mansion. Luckily for visitors, he is also a kind spirit.
Footsteps of unknown origins have also been reported. They happen at random, according to staff members, and at all hours of the day. Staff report seeing windows in the mansion open and close themselves as almost if they have a will of their own. Visitors and staff report seeing a portrait of Henry Pittick moving around on the wall by itself. Some of the strangest reports involve human-like shapes moving furniture, pictures, and even houseplants from room to room. One visitor reported hearing a picture fall off the wall in one of the rooms. When she went to investigate the sound, she watched as a woman wearing a long gown picked up the falling pitcher from the floor. A staff member came up behind the woman and asked her if she was okay. The woman turned back around to see that the woman in the gown had vanished. One female employee got the scare of her life as she closed up the building for the night. Part of her job involved turning off all the lights in the mansion. After all the lights were off, she began locking all of the doors, including the front door of the mansion. As she turned to leave for the night, all the lights on the mansion switched on.
Yeah, that would scare me too.
You know what happened? I'd leave. I ain't doing that.
Yeah,
again.
I know.
They're like, dang.
What? How many rooms is it? 40 something? 46 or something like that? Yeah. No. Okay.
I would not lock the door and then turn around and watch all the lights turn on. I would not be like, oh my God, I'm scared. I'd be like, wow, I'm not doing that again.
Exactly. I'd be like, damn, that's crazy. Have a good night.
I'm just curious, at that point, instead of going like room to room and turning them off, why wouldn't you just go to the breaker?
That too. Yeah. Because they had electricity and stuff, obviously.
Well, yeah. I'm just saying, if instead of going room to room and turning the lights off, I would go to the mechanical room and cut off everything with the exception of...
Maybe she...
Boilers, water.
Maybe that wasn't something like HVAC. She knew how to do. You know? And this was in the early 60s. So, you know. Or late 60s. Right?
I'm going to find the easiest way to do my job.
Oh, yeah. But...
And I'm not going to share that information with anybody else. Be like, man, it takes like an hour to turn these lights off. Yeah, that's crazy, bro. Yeah, it's wild, dude.
Yeah, but I wouldn't either.
I do that at work now, too. Mm-hmm. Man, it takes like 3 hours to do this. Yeah, I know, right? And then I get it done in like 35 minutes. Just chill. I get back, and I get back about 30 minutes early. They're like, man, you got that done really fast. I know.
It's crazy.
It's because I'm just the best.
Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't either. If I literally went through and turned off the lights, and I know for a fact that I turned off the lights because that is my one job, and I locked that front door and all the lights come back on, I'd be like, okay, have your night lights. Have a good night. See you later.
I mean, it's haunted. What's your boss going to do? Not believe you?
Exactly.
I cut all the lights off. No, you didn't. When I come back in, they were all on. Mask crazy.
That's crazy. Next time, maybe you should get a camera.
It's crazy. You know what? Ghosts. I didn't do my job because of ghosts.
Literally. No matter what you believe, it is clear that someone or something haunts the grounds of the Pittick Mansion. Whether it be the spirits of Henry and Georgiana Pittick, or that of their groundskeeper, you can be sure there is something supernatural taking place there. In 1965, the mansion was open to the public and soon became a favorite among Portlanders. After the Pitticks passed away, the mansion had sat unused and abandoned for a while. $8 million was needed to completely restore the mansion to her former glory. Of course, Portland came together and raised enough cash to restore the mansion. With its location and it being situated 1,000 feet above sea level, the Pittick Mansion is a national favorite for bird watching. More than 80,000 visitors now flock, to bird watch, and enjoy the glories of the mansion. The McClay Park Trailhead begins almost 6 miles from the northern slopes of the Pittick Hills. After a day spent hiking, visitors can take a breather at the mansion and enjoy a rest and the view. So.
Bad dad joke was bad.
That was funny. I didn't even know that was in there. I got my information from the Pittick Mansion, or for the Pittick Mansion, from allthat'sinteresting.com and Portland Ghost. So. That's funny. But.
You want to go to a haunted mansion and watch Burbs?
Well, yeah. I'm sure Eli would like to do that.
Yeah, he hates birds. That's why I have bird feeders all the way around the house.
I know. He definitely wasn't going to go and attack that woodpecker a few minutes ago. So. Okay. So next is the Jesse Lee Home for Children, which sounds really creepy.
The cold, snowy forest regions of Alaska do not seem particularly hospitable to human life. Shocker. We're also in Alaska, so obviously sketchy shit's going to happen up there.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
With permafrost below the ground and dense trees blocking the sunlight, one might be surprised to find, nestled outside a city like Seward, an abandoned orphanage. Crossing onto the property, there's an instant melancholy, a feeling of loss and pain. It is obvious that these buildings have not been occupied in many years, but then a sound, a giggling child, is heard across the main yard. It is joined by other voices, more than could easily be hidden around a corner. Soon those giggles are replaced by shouts of joy and the whipping sound of jump ropes hitting the dirt. It isn't the cold Alaskan air that raises the hair on the arms or the nape of the neck. It's a cold chill that starts from the inside and works its way out as you realize, whether you can see them or not, you are not alone. There are many incidences that can cause a haunting. Horrific deaths, strong emotions, or simply lost souls tend to leave impressions on things in the physical world. Some hauntings are mere echoes, remnants of those who pass through any given place. Still, others are souls that are greedy for more life than their fair share. Finally, there are those who were taken too soon, cut short in life before it really got underway, unable to understand what has happened to them. The children simply stay. Many children, it seems, still walk the grounds of the old Jesse Lee Home for Children in Seward, Alaska.
This particular story is probably going to freak me out because I do not like children. I don't like ghost children. They're just creepy.
I think it's another reason why I knew I didn't want kids. I'm also not trying to wake up at 2 a.m. and have a small child.
Dad!
No, not even that. Just like giggling or laughing down the hallway. It's like, wow, that's how you get shot. It's crazy, man. I don't know what bullets are going to do to a ghost, but it'll make me feel better.
Yeah, no. No.
I could not. I could. I refuse.
And honestly, though, having him be hello at 3 in the morning.
The haunted
The haunted well,
what's
Keekmo.
Even, what's even creepier is when I hear stuff in the house. Not this house, but like in Kernersville and stuff God. I could hear people walking in the kitchen. And I'm like, oh, it's just Eli getting up to get a snack.
And he's not.
And I'm like, hey, Keek, what are you doing? And he's next to me in the bed. And he goes, meh. Like, oh.
Or the person that lived in the attic in that house, because every time you'd put the cover back, like a day later, it'd be moved again. And I'm like,
I'm telling you.
Somebody lived in that
attic. I'm telling you. When you went to New York, and I had to go to the hospital because I sliced my hand open, even though I didn't want to, I heard people walking in that house all night long. All night long. Because he would be in bed with me.
And
he would sleep on your pillow.
That house wasn't that
old. It was built in the
80s. 89.
88,
89. I think so.
No, I think it was like 84.
Either way.
Nonetheless. But yeah, I could hear people all the time in that house. I didn't tell you about it because I was fixing it up so we could sell it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in general, though, that house, like, you could not walk anywhere in that house without somebody knowing.
It was very, very, very creaky.
Yeah, so.
And like, it's like, most people are like, oh, it's the house settling. Mm-hmm. Like, I understand that, but coming from a construction, like, standpoint, houses settle and they creak. Mom's house creaks because it was built in 81 and it's old and it's a two-story Cape Cod. You know what a house doesn't sound like when it creaks? Somebody walking on solid oak floors.
Yeah.
Which is what we had in the kitchen.
And then the other thing, that flap that was on the outside where the microwave was, that shit would flap all the time and it would be just so creepy. And I know it was just the wind because the wind would blow it open. But when that thing would slam.
If I could silicone it shut because it was awful.
Oh, my God.
But I couldn't because it was for the microwave.
Oh, God, it was awful. Okay, anyways.
Rant time.
History of the Jesse Lee Home. The Jesse Lee Home for Children actually originated in 1890 in the Unalaska region. The Women's Home Missionary Society of the Methodist Episcopal Church opened the doors to the building as a school for educating young natives. The school, run out of their home by Professor, oh my God.
Yeah, Sean Connery.
By Professor John Tuck and his wife, soon began taking in unfortunates in the desolate area. Because of the area and the difficulties encountered by settlers, they began to help disadvantaged children, orphans, and children from broken homes. Many of them came to live in the orphanage as a result of the influenza epidemics that were rampant across the land, claiming both of their parents. Legend tells that the name Jesse Lee was actually that of a beloved traveling preacher. The school was named for him because of his love for the children and his unwavering generosity towards them. Because of the difficulties getting supplies to the school, it was moved in 1925 to Seward, where it flourished. With more than 70 children and staff of 10 adults, the home was an important area of learning and care for the children. In 1927, the home gained notoriety through one of its students, a 13-year-old boy named Benny Benson. That's a funny name. Benson entered a contest to design Alaska's state flag and won. On August 9th of that year, the Jesse Lee Home was honored to be the first location to have his flag officially raised. Over the years, there have been several notable alumni of the Jesse Lee Home, artists, composers, and the like, with all of them giving credit for their success to the care and support and nurturing they received at the orphanage. During World War II, the home served as temporary barracks for soldiers. In 1964, on Good Friday, tragedy struck the school in the form of a natural disaster. An earthquake, one of the worst seen in Alaska at that time, rocked the land and toppled some of the walls of the dormitories. Ooh, that's cool, though. I didn't know that the Alaska state flag was designed by a kid.
I didn't know. Why would they use it as barracks for World War II? It's Alaska.
I mean, it's close to Russia? I don't know.
Japan.
Okay.
Had to think. I'm like, hold on, let me look at the globe. Because they probably use Cali and then Alaska to get to Hawaii and the Pacific Theater. Pacific?
Yeah, Pacific. We're Atlantic.
Yes.
They're Pacific. Yes. There you go.
Yeah, Pacific Theater.
You got it.
Because I was like, why?
I don't know.
Because like, for the Cold War, it made sense. Because Russia, Alaska.
Right.
Cool, that made sense.
But
more than a dozen children were killed. With much of the school damaged or destroyed, the Alaskan government decided to move the school once again to its current home in Anchorage. The old buildings, however, were simply left standing, an eerie reminder of the lives tragically lost. The reports of paranormal activity at the home are uncountable. Many who step onto the grounds report the feeling of melancholy. The sounds of children giggling can be heard all over the grounds, but no living children are ever found to be the source. Others have claimed to hear the sounds of a jump rope tapping on the sidewalk, which can be explained by wind or anything else. I mean,
yeah.
Many visitors have reported hearing the sounds of little feet running past them, and the sounds of cheering follows, as if these lingering apparitions are still playing the games that they enjoyed in life. The children's lives at the Jesse Lee home were good, and they were nurtured, happy and well taken care of, which is probably why these little souls have made the old home and its grounds their eternal play area. As for the structure, all hope is not lost. Apparently, several of the children who resided, as well as several organizations, are trying to raise the money to refurbish the building. Their goal is to turn the old home into a museum so that everyone can learn about the history and the enjoyment that may still be found there.
Well, that was sweet.
Why they always want to restore these sketchy buildings?
I mean, I get, like, it's part of history. I don't know. And I get, okay, so, like, this one, the Jesse Lee home, I get because most of the children who are still alive and did have a great experience there and great care, I can see them being like, oh man, this place that got me through my childhood basically is ruined and I am now capable of helping it.
I guess you're right.
So, yeah. Well, I got my information for the Jesse Lee Home for Children from hauntsofamerica.com and dreadcentral.com. I feel like this episode's a little bit shorter.
It is. I mean, it's two short stories.
Yeah. So, oh, well, I guess that's all we have for you for this week. Sorry for missing last week, but hey.
Don't be sorry. You have nobody to apologize to.
I know. Oh, well.
They'll be all right.
I'm trying. We're getting back on track and get back with the podcast. But I am taking two classes at the time, so you're just going to have to bear with me, to be honest.
And as much as we enjoy doing the podcast,
I don't get paid.
I have put a lot of effort and time into this woman getting her degree so that I can relax for once and not have to bust my ass every day.
Yeah. Also, I don't know whose idea it was to go into human resources because this human resource class is, woo, but.
It was literally yours.
I know it was, but we'll get there. We'll get there. We're almost done. December.
And then we making money, baby.
Yeah.
And then I get to be a stay-at-home cat dad, baby.
Yes.
Yes?
Maybe.
It's recorded.
I don't know.
It's recorded. Okay.
Anyway, well, we'll see about that. But okay, so anyways, I guess we'll see you next week. Don't forget, I will post pictures on Instagram that will then post to Facebook. That's how you can currently contact us. You can message me through the Instagram page. You can message me through the Facebook page. You can also email with questions, concerns, comments, stories, story ideas to 3 amtalesofterror@gmail.com. Currently, I think that's the only ways. But I will post pictures tonight. Stories post at 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on Mondays still. So other than that, yeah, we'll see you next week. And hope you enjoyed this episode. Bye.
Later.